This is the One Piece Podcast, episode 627 for the week of Monday, June 29th, 2020. My name is Zach.
And my name is Ed.
And on today's episode, he is our very special guest. You may know him as the translator for One Piece and Shonen Jump. And Manga Plus, Stephen Paul, is joining us again. How's it going, Stephen?
Hello, everybody. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here. So this episode is going to be our follow-up to our design deep dive from a couple weeks back. It's actually amazing we have not had a manga break in like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Especially after so many in a row. So we're going to continue that. And for those who don't know, that's the One Piece Magazine Volume 9. A bulk of this is going to be the Hungry Days stuff, so we'll talk about that. We also have, I can't believe I'm saying it, the return of the anime recap. So we'll have Sam on for that a little later. I believe that's episode 930. But, you know, I think we're ready to get, let's just get straight into the design stuff from this special issue of One Piece Magazine Volume 9. Stephen, take it away.
All right. Yeah, this is a special... This is a special anime episode. The anime is returning, and we're going to talk about, I mean, I guess it's not the anime, but it is One Piece animation. There is a special in this volume 9 of the magazine about Hungry Days, and it includes a brief little interview with the character designer, who was kind of in charge of the look of the commercials. And then there's a bunch of pages of design sketches that pretty much look like exactly like the finished product that you see in these commercials of all the characters, the Straw Hats, and then all of the other guys, especially from the Paramount War, the school festival, the one with all of the. You know, all of the pirates and the white beard pirates, the black beard pirates and the Marines and so on. It's pretty cool. I'm sure some of these sketches have been on the official Hungry Days website, if I'm remembering correctly, because I know that Maddie like translated the character profiles for all of the Straw Hats. They're high schooler character profiles, and I think that some of these sketches came from there as well, but there's a bunch of them in the magazine itself, which is yet another reason to pick up this one. Why don't we just get right into it with the interview with Tsubanouchi. Eisaku Tsubanouchi, or Kubanouchi, excuse me, is he's a mangaka himself. He's been around since at least the 80s, I believe. I remember reading, he had a really famous series back then called Tsurumoku Dokushinryo, which means Tsurumoku Bachelor's Dorm. And that was sort of like a college romantic comedy, quite heavy on the comedy, actually. It was a really good one, and he's found a kind of another career as an illustrator and designer. His art style has changed a lot, and he's, you know, as you can see from the commercials, he's got a reputation for drawing very kind of fashionable and attractive female designs, and does lots of commercial work, stuff like that. So he's the one who is responsible for the look of these One Piece Hungry Days commercials. So the interview starts off saying, so tell me, how did you feel when you got, so the Hungry Days series, I guess, is it is more than just the One Piece, like it's a whole promotional campaign. They've done other, I guess, presumably non-collaborative editions of these commercials, just advertising cup noodles and stuff. What did you think when you got the, or when you heard about the offer to do a collaboration with One Piece? And Kubanouchi says, You know, it's the Hungry Days series itself actually won some like commercial awards because they, you know, they do things like that. It's it was a very popular series already, and now you're, you know, you're bringing in this massive property to do a collaboration with. So I really had to think a lot about it. It's a you know, it's a series that is beloved both in Japan and all around the world. And you know, I had to, I'm here to, you know, to bring my design to the work, and to filter this through my own style. So you know, how do I you know, how do I approach this in a way that that works for the people who love the original series, and how do I make it convincing to them? That was what I had to think about a lot. So they say, "What? Okay, so how did you approach this?" And he says, "I think you know, what I wanted to do was capture three things about the image that readers hold of the characters, and that is their form, their physical form, their silhouette, their outline, and the characterization. These are the three things that are important. So, you know, we have this this concept, which is, okay, what if the characters of One Piece are in the real world and going to high school? That's the premise. So you've got my artistic touch to it. But how do you, you know, how do you preserve the looks of these characters, the outline, the forms, the things that make them recognizable as Oda's characters, to the readers, and, try to preserve those things. So, in that sense, you know, I was really heavily focused on how do I make sure that these, you know, not just the main characters, but even all these little sub characters, still speak to the fans of One Piece who are going to be looking for them, who are going to be drawn in by this collaboration.
You know, I think he's talking about us there.
Yes, yes, many folks similar to us, and yeah. So they have an example here of a rough illustration, which is Gaimon and Sarfunkel. And they are in their like cardboard boxes instead of the treasure chest and the barrel. And he has written this is you know, taken from the sketches. He has written a comment here, and there's actually lots and lots of comments in the magazine. They're all written in pink next to the illustrations. But in this example, you can see it says, I tried to cut down a little bit on the kind of pudginess of Gaimon, like under the chin. But in parentheses, I can't change the outline too much, otherwise he's not recognizable as the character anymore. And so the interviewer says, you know, yeah, you have this comment about the form of Gaimon here in this illustration, and he says, so, you know, when the, you know, on these big wide shots where you have lots of characters crammed into the frame, they're all going to be really tiny. So, you know, I had to focus on, okay, how do you visually identify this character just at a glance to be able to recognize them? So, you know, one of the fun parts of the Hungry Days commercials is looking for the characters. You know, it's part of the fun of like finding them or identifying them. Who is that? Oh, I know who that is. So, you know, if you lean too heavily on the Hungry Days aspect as opposed to the One Piece aspect, you're going to lose sight of who is who. And in fact, he says, in the Zorro commercial, which I think that was the first one, if I'm remembering correctly, of the four, yeah. There's Zorro, there's, the Nami one, the, Vivi one, and then the, Paramount War.
The big battle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. he says, in the Zoro one, I had Moria, and he was definitely more human than his original character. And I saw, you know, feedback on Twitter that was saying like, oh, I couldn't tell that was him. And I felt bad about that. Like, I took that into account of like, okay, you know, that's I went too far in that direction. But on the other hand, if you're just putting the character themselves from the original story directly into these commercials, then what is my role in this? Like, I'm here for a reason, to bring my own art style to it. So, you know, I had to think a lot about where is my axle, on the creative process, between Hungry Days and One Piece. For Chopper, for example, he's a main character. He's got the hat. So yeah, very easy to identify. But for the smaller characters, you really have to be careful about, you know, leaving things that the fans are going to notice and, identify, just enough so that, you know, it doesn't, make it difficult. The interviewer says, you seemed to have you agonized over the proportions of Ivankov, for example. And he says, yeah, so my first thought on Ivankov was like, where is his neck? You know, his face is so large. You know, you need that. That's part of the impact of Ivankov's character. He has to have a huge face. So, you know, I had to figure out, okay, how do I leave the eccentricity and yet still be like, okay, this guy is still, he's human. He's barely human, but he is there. You know, the look of the proportions of the character. So, you know, naturally there's a lot of iteration on that, of refining, you know, try one design, you decide, no, that's not good enough. I got to retry it. The interviewer says, so that was, that's where, you know, you're doing it for the fan. That's where that part of the process comes in the mental design phase. And he says, you know, to be honest, there were, you know, I was, you know, making these designs, and I am doing my own process of like, okay, make a design and decide, no, what, this isn't good enough. I'm going to reject this one already, you know, go through that iteration and then finally come up with something that I find satisfactory. So when the, you know, the rest of the production side of the, you know, the commercial committee or whoever it is that is approving all of these things says, no, that's not good. And, you know, we need a redo on that one. It kind of pissed me off. So, you know, he's like, I'm doing all this work to refine this process and it's still not good enough. You know, it's obviously the people who are funding the commercial who want this put together. How they feel about it is super important. So, you know, I took their feedback very seriously. You know, I was drawing these things, like thinking or considering what it is that the fans want out of these characters. What is it that they're looking for? What are they projecting onto these characters? So, you know, with Luffy, it's boyishness. It's, you know, the dreams that boys have. With Chopper, it's just pure, you know, adorable, lovableness, things like that. And the next question, what did you, you know, what were you really focused on, when you drew these One Piece characters? And he says in the world of One Piece, within the whole like design of that world, you can have these deformed characters, you know, who do not have realistic proportions, and they feel fine. They're not out of place. But if I just drew exactly what those were in my art style, you know, it would seem fake. It wouldn't sit right. So, but on the other hand, you know, if I get too wrapped up in that, then, you know, I can easily kind of twist these characters until they're not recognizable for who they actually are. So I really had to focus on making them as close to the original as I could. And one of the, you know, one of the things about Oda's art is that the character, it doesn't matter what angle he draws the characters, they never, like, their design never breaks down. He understands not just the, like, the facial expressions and, like, the proportions of their features, but also, like, their physical structure. So he can draw them from any angle, and they still look like the characters that they are. And that was something that was really important to not screw up with this. They ask, were there any difficult parts, you know, in terms of converting Oda's art into your style that you struggled with? And he says, well, you know, my drawing in my style is something that I do subconsciously or unconsciously. So there's really no, like, conversion process. It just happens. You know, I just draw, and it's already kind of working itself out. But what I was, you know, trying to preserve was, like, sort of possessing the characters, or being getting into the mind of the characters, and the visual and the personality, and you know, they're just their general atmosphere. Oh, so what does that mean? So, you know, you think about what you do is you think about the character, like, what moved them about you? Like, what gave you an emotional reaction? What made you laugh? What made you cry? And then you amplify that feeling inside yourself as you kind of take that into account and then spit it back out onto the page. So with Nami, you think about, okay, she's got this, you know, these mental scars, this, you know, this pain on the inside, and yet she acts, you know, really lively and energetic and happy, so that, you know, you don't feel that sense that she's harboring this inner pain. And that's kind of the feeling that you get with Nami. When you draw, it's like the drawing itself is sort of like a secondary process of exporting the image that exists in your mind, using your imagination. The drawing is just sort of like a byproduct of that. So when the character is, you know, inhabiting your mind, your hand just kind of goes on its own. It just sort of naturally sketches it out. And, you know, forms the expression and all of that. So, you know, it's really important for me, like, how much do you empathize with the character, and how much do you let them inhabit your mind as you create the drawing on the page? And then, you know, don't let anything else kind of into the process to muck it up. And they say, well, it must be really hard with so many characters to design for this. And he says, yeah, it's not just the number, but it's difficult to do what I just talked about, this sort of possession with the what he calls the monster characters, which are basically just, you know, anyone who is not a regular human proportion.
Less than usual of them these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes they're the right proportions, but they're like 30 feet tall, and I guess you could ignore that. But
yeah, he only had to do a few Wano characters in these commercials. That'd be a good extra. Do another one for Wano.
I mean, I think there's, you know, not to interrupt too much here, but like I think there's a ton of you could potentially, if you wanted to, make a whole series with all these characters, not just because there is a whole series with all these characters, but also, like, Katakuri is in this, and he's sitting down, but it doesn't look like he's 30 feet tall, so.
Yeah, or 16, no, I'm sure they, they must have focused a lot on, like, okay, everyone has to be between these heights to make sure that they all fit together. So the next comment is that there's a lot of notes and of writing on these rough design sketches, and so he says you know, so obviously he's not the animator. He's just the designer. So he just gives them these static images and it's the animators who draw them. And so he says, you know, if I don't focus on like expressing as much detail as I possibly can through these designers, like all of that empty space is going to be filled by the animators themselves. And at that point, you know, why am I even the character designer? You know, I need to pull my weight around and, you know, do the job that, you know, I was hired to do here. So, you know, he drew all of these little, you know, wrote all these little things, for detail. And he has an example here with, Vivi, and, he's written some notes about her hairline, the back of her head when she has her ponytail up high on the back of the head. And it's stuff about like, okay, this, look at the way that the hair bunches, like it's not a flat line that just goes across the back of the head. You know, it kind of goes up and down and, you know, shallow and deep. And he says stuff like, you know, do a Google image search for, you know, high ponytail and draw the hairline, you know, using those as reference and focus on these little details like the silhouette of the hairline. Don't just draw from memory. You know, lots of instructions like that for the animators. He says, what was fun about drawing all these One Piece characters? and he, Kubonochi says, you know, you could really, like, what was really fun was when I could tell just from, you know, starting to draw, like you could feel the kind of the attitude, like the fun freewheeling attitude that Oda has, that he's really enjoying himself when he draws these characters. You know, as a mangaka myself, he says, there's something really fun about understanding and like intuitively picking up on the author's love for their characters through the art. He says, I really felt that with these monster characters, these guys who look less human, but you know, that's the difficulty is in how to make them then look more human for these commercials. Last comment here is, Kubonochi Sensei, what do you think is the secret? What's the draw to One Piece? What makes it special? And he says, I think it comes down to the characters. You know, with manga in general, not just in One Piece, but just manga in general. And this is definitely true, just speaking personally from, you know, all the comments that I see, is that story and, you know, story and setting and design, all these things are secondary. Really what it comes down to, what is super, super important, is how interesting and how appealing your characters are. Because if you have that down, if you have that solid base of good characterization, then you know, whether it's a sad scene or a tough scene, a painful scene, or a fun scene, you know, all of these different instances, the characters, you know, they have a life of their own. They can move the action on their own, and when the characters are convincing, that's what will convince those fans to stick around for it.
Yeah, I mean, I like that concept, and it's kind of what make the Hungry Days thing so cool, is that these mm-hmm. characters jump off the page in a completely different setting and world than they currently inhabit, and yet you could completely mm-hmm. imagine and believe these characters in these different places, in these literally different yeah. universes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the last comment he has is, you know, a weekly manga serial is, you know, just really taxing in terms physically and mentally. I think the fact that he is able to not just to keep up this story about becoming the Pirate King, but also have the fans following along, you know, in order to put together something that is so successful. that the fans are willing to continue going along for the journey is something that is very worthy of respect. There's a last little note here that I guess the quote unquote the logo, like the cup noodle that appears on the advertising poster, I guess. I'm not sure if there's a cup noodle poster in the ads themselves or if it's talking about some more promotional stuff, but he actually drew the cup and the logo himself. So that's a neat little touch.
And it was cool. I think they used that same font on the Shonen Jump issue, I think, where they featured the Hungry Days stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah.
The one in One Piece, right. It said. But yeah, I think, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so after this point, we have a whole bunch of pages of the design sketches, and they have the character profiles as well as you can read a lot of the design comments that he had. The cool thing is that you can even see them on these like group shots where you go into like the sort of Paramount war scenes, the school competition stuff. Unfortunately, some of them do get a little tiny, hard to read, but most of them are pretty legible. So we start off with Monkey D. Luffy, who is described as the class mood maker, who is recognizable for his wearing a straw hat. He started getting friends. You know, he started building up his friends group as soon as he entered the school, until the point that he became, you know, just like a famous guy around campus. Everybody knows who he is. Because he always gets hungry very quickly, he is always carrying around a cup noodle. And you have some of his like his conventional designs that are kind of cleaned up, and then there's some rougher ones that are more deformed where he's like stuffing his cheeks like a squirrel. And has a nice close-up of his eye. Let's see what some of these comments are. So his hair is drawn, in sort of bundles, the way that it is close to the way that it is drawn in the original. If you kind of unify the width of them, like make them all kind of at least a certain, if you do it too orderly, then it looks too much like a shonen manga. It doesn't look realistic enough. So make it look natural and kind of randomize it a little bit to make it a little more lively. Luffy's eyes, there's a nice close up on his eye that says like, you got to make it. If there is a shot of Luffy, a close up of Luffy's eyes, make sure that you you give it like some special highlight. Scatter the highlights around. Use a strong light dark gradation. It has to feel, his eyes have to feel mystical. Like there's something about them that makes the viewer's heart skip a beat. And then they have one of the finished shots of Luffy in the Paramount War, where he is furiously brandishing a cup of miso cup noodles towards the camera.
We all remember that scene. It was the most impactful scene of Marineford when he did that.
Yeah. When he jumped to the aid with his cup noodles.
Don't worry, Ace, I have noodles.
Yeah. Oh,
good. That'll solve my literally having nothing in my chest.
Yeah. Thank you for feeding me. That's what that commercial needed.
Damn, now I wish we called it that. Wish we didn't have a name for this episode. No, it's we're already in the design deep dive. Thank you for feeding me.
We're locked in. The next one is Zoro, who is a firm student of Kendo who seeks to be the world's greatest swordsman. His extreme difficulty with following directions or detecting directions causes him to, he still does not know his way around the school. So he's late every day. He also tends to sleep in class. Let's just say his life habits are not a model for other students to follow.
He's drawn very, he's not as confident in the Hungry Days as he is, I think, in the series.
I think it's supposed to reflect him earlier on, too. Like, most of these, yeah.
And so that one on the far, that picture is sort of the first three on the left there. You don't see him thinking like that a lot.
Yeah, he looks more like a pensive teenager.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Ed, if you see him in college after the time skip in Hungry Days, I'm sure he'd be a smug asshole most of the time. Not unwarranted, but he would be, because that's kind of closer where he is now. Not that I don't love Zoro, but he kind of can be a smug asshole sometimes. ahead, Stephen.
They got his his shot where he's posing in his room with the Kendo swords in front of the mirror, trying to improve his skills after losing to Mihawk at Kendo.
He still has the Kendo sword in his mouth, though, the three sword style. I'm very happy that makes it to the high school alternate universe.
Yeah, I don't know if that's that might be against the rules of Kendo, but
look,
no, I guess we won't tell him that. Next is Nami, who is a hardworking teenage high school student who has been really good at predicting the weather ever since she was a little kid. She's very busy between studying to be a navigator and also working part-time jobs. She loves tangerines, and she even uses a tangerine scented hand cream.
I love the specifics. I also didn't notice that at the what are we calling this? The Arlong Park restaurant.
Yes, it is called the Arlong Park restaurant.
Okay, great. Their apron is the Sun Pirates logo.
Yeah,
I did not notice that. Sun Pirates with a skull in the middle instead of a sun.
No, I don't think there's a skull.
If you
go to the previous page, Stephen, I think there's something written on there.
It says Arlong Park.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's neat. And then he does have some written comments on this illustration of her. Like, she's got a little tiny tuft of hair at the back of her head. So it's just poking up a little bit. And she needs to have one of her bangs off the side of her facial silhouette needs to kind of poke out. But other than that, her eyes and her eyebrows, the expression of them together should basically, in her default stage, should feel confident, like she's got things under control. But you do see a lot of different emotional variations on these sketches. And on the next page, we have Usopp. He is, let's see, oh boy. when he was in his first year at high school, he had an unauthorized school website full of fake news. It literally says that, fake news. in his second year, he started to gain more respect for being good at video games from his fellow students.
So he went from a fake news site to video games?
I guess. That's the modern day equivalent.
Yeah, I guess
sure,
you're right.
But ever since he has not been posting his secret sites as much. So there you go. He's shaped up, and his design, he's got one of the more interesting designs since he kind of gave him this like wavy perm look instead of his usual bushy hair. So his comments here are, you know, okay, make sure that his bangs have the wave part of him about this far. You know, you can't get him too much closer. Otherwise he'll look kind of dorky. His eyes need to be a little, downcast, just a little bit droopy. And his lips are slightly thicker. They have a bit more of an outline. And then the finished shot is of him in the Nami commercial, where the other guys are in the classroom and he is celebrating with Luffy with the cup noodles.
Yeah, that famous scene.
Yes, as you do when you and your bros have cup noodles. Sanji is good at cooking and good at soccer. And he's always got some kind of candy on a stick in his mouth.
He One works might even at, say a lollipop.
A lollipop, yeah. He works at the restaurant, the Baratier. And he likes to where he creates sweets that look good on social media. Gains popularity from the female customers.
By the way,
on social media, if he wants to get on social media, he should be making bubble tea.
Sweets are good. Wow. Right. What I was going to say is it would be really funny if Sanji worked at the Baratie, the actual restaurant that exists in the real world. Flip it on its head one more time. He does not have the curly eyebrow, though, which I guess is just too unrealistic for the real world. The
swirl eyebrow. I suppose so. He does have the trade-off there was that he still definitely has the Sanji hair. That's what his comment is here. He's like, Sanji just really, he needs that hairstyle. He needs the part, that just exposes one eye. And he also says, you know, with the way that he looks here, the little tiny beard just doesn't really work. So we're going to remove that one. So. And that's why he is, he's got those baby cheeks. And his shot here from the finished commercials from the Vivi one, where he is trying to hit up Vivi, and Nami is, she's the lineman. She's blocking him.
She's mine.
From getting any closer. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't notice the Sunny in the background there, too. And I mean, during the original model. Commercial.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
And Sanji, next is Sanji Chopper. Is,
by the way, Sanji's his most Sanji there.
Next is Chopper, the boy with the reindeer style face. While he looks very young. I think that's supposed to be up to the reader's interpretation. He's very youthful. But everyone loves how pure at heart he is, because he is he's got a knack for learning about medicine and topics like that. He is often seen helping out at the nurse's office with people who get hurt, and you get some nice variation where there's the cute kid Chopper, but then you have like. His monster form, which is basically, or I guess not monster form. What's his like big burly point?
It's not human point.
Heavy point.
Yeah.
Where he's just looks like he's about 25 here and very broad shouldered and tall.
Could be like in JoJo. He could be 16 in that still. You know, totally fits.
Sure, I guess. Yeah. So he's got his comments about Chopper's design here. It's like, okay, make his ears should be a little bit bigger. His nose should be small. His mouth shape is similar to the original design. So, you know, you got to make sure that the corners of his mouth are always kind of poking upwards when he smiles. So he's got the extra cuteness. He should look like a middle schooler. You know, always focus on the moe aspect of his, you know, his expressions and his poses and stuff. Just not too much to be obnoxious, but, you know, always have that in mind.
And I love the crying ones.
He has the crying one where Chopper is going, "Oh no, I wasn't scared." His finish shot here is in the VV commercial, where they are out, I guess this is in the winter time, where they're out riding on the, like the park, the super spot build duck squad.
Like those things on the giant springs in the park.
The
park, those have a name?
Ride.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have a name.
It could also be like one of those little kid rides in front of the grocery store.
Yes, that's exactly what those are. Yeah. It's adorable that it's Karu, and too bad Karu can't exist.
See those
yeah. They don't have like just some weird duck following them. That's really disappointing, I think.
This is the best way to bring them in. Nico Robin is the smart student. She's cool and she's self-assured. She has a great interest in history and always gets full marks on her Japanese history tests. She is also her dream is to unlock the mysteries of the void 150 year blank that exists in Japanese history about 4 centuries ago. So I guess, you know, referring to the Warring States period, the Sengoku era or something. That's kind of cheeky. His comments on her was like, make sure she has the flat bangs right over the eyes, with just a little gaps in between them to break it up. And her hair length should be about twice the length of her head itself. And the ends should also be very even at the bottom. And she appears here on the Zorro commercial, where she is surprised at how fiercely Zorro is training with the rest of the crew.
Meanwhile, it looks like Chopper is holding a cat.
Yeah, so. Chopper is distracted by a little cat he found. All right, next page, Frankie.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. This is cool. Yes, Frankie is the delinquent high school student who is the leader of a gang called the Frankie Family.
That's what he is here.
That's basically kind of the model that his character, his vibe was based on. His dream, he's got this dream that he wants to be a carpenter. And so he is, he's finding ways to make that become a reality, where he built the big arch for the school culture festival that everybody walks through. And he's doing his best to help out the group. He's, thinking about his pals. And so obviously he's got the regent hairstyle, the pompadour. As they say, his mouth's got to be big, and he's got to have the sideburns, very similar to his original look. I love the he actually drew and the when Frankie's doing his super pose. There's a little guy next to him. That is the Kubunouchi, the character designer in the background doing the pose with him.
Yeah, I like that.
Meaty arms and little skinny legs.
Yeah. And his shot here is in the Nami commercial, where he's looking at he's seeing off Nami as she rushes off to her part-time job. That one's kind of funny. I just can't help but see oars on the left edge of the of that his screenshot.
And his, Oars Jr.
Oh, yes.
The little tiny version.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a, yeah, you can see a bunch of people there, like Kaku and Fukuro. Yes. Yeah, there's, Brooke. Brooke is next, and he is the skinny guy, the guy who's so skinny he almost looks like a skeleton. He doesn't like direct sunlight, so he stays indoors a lot of the time, and because of that, because he didn't have enough credits, he got held back a year, so he's a bit older. On Luffy's invitation, he's been coming back to school more often now. He's coming out of his shell, and his hobby is writing songs and uploading them to the net. So he's a SoundCloud artist. That's what Brooke is.
There's not enough face tattoos for that.
He's got, I like this, this drawing of his, kind of his Afro bunches. He says you have to separate it into three, kind of bunches, where there's the part that's on top of his head. And then there's kind of two bigger, parts that hang down, to the sides. So that's how it kind of looks in three dimensions. Some of his other comments are the outline of the Afro has to be a little angular, like it kind of, you know, you use straight lines and it kind of goes, his ears should be, exposed so that it, you know, you can tell when his head is rotating, it adds a little more detail so that you can see that happening. And he's got a little bit of a sideburn.
His hair more mullet-like.
Yeah, it kind of does. His nose should be kind of jutting upward a little bit, not too big, but I guess that's kind of the trade-off to make it to replace the, you know, the skull, the empty nose of the skull. His front teeth should be large, and they should, you know, his mouth should be, as a general rule, his mouth should be open all the time. So that's all. Those are all the skull details that he's trying to bring out in his human design.
They didn't give him a facial scar.
No, they didn't. Yeah, I guess maybe that was a little too gnarly for a high school.
Luffy already has one.
Design.
That's because he stabbed himself in the face. That's normal for, I mean,
yeah,
normal child behavior.
And he's got, you know, he has to have a thin neck and kind of narrow shoulders. But that's so that the school uniform just kind of hangs off of him, makes him look skinnier. And, he appears here on this, shot from the Vivi one where they're going to the summer festival and there's fireworks in the background. And, Brooke has got he won the goldfish from the goldfish scooping game. So he's got a little bag full of water and a goldfish. And good for him. Next we have, yeah.
Maybe that's Laboon. Maybe he's going to name it Laboon.
Oh my God, that's perfect. I can't believe they didn't. Yeah, they should have put that in. That'd be pretty great.
Yeah.
Next is Vivi. And wow, he's got a bunch of designs for Vivi. He clearly had, you know, this is kind of his wheelhouse, like I was saying earlier about what this guy is good at designing and what he gets hired to design a lot. So she is another classmate who started hanging out with Luffy's little friend group on Nami's invitation. They're worried because she's going to have to transfer out of the school. She's going to have to move away and be separate, but she's always held up. She's buoyed by the friendship, the unchanging friendship that they share. So that's the story of how they split apart from Vivi. And all these notes he's got. You know, he has kind of like the contours of her head, showing kind of where to to draw the lines of her hair with her, you know, the way that her hair is pulled back, where the hairline should be. You know, he says, like, you really have to kind of do this contouring when you draw characters who have their hair pulled back and their forehead all the way exposed, because, you know, otherwise you'll end up with weird effects that don't quite look realistic or appealing. Let's see. Yeah, he also has the notes about the back part of the hairline. Her ponytail should go all the way kind of below the chest on the back. So it's a long ponytail. Her picture is where she's first introduced into the friend circle by Nami, where she's not really sure if she wants to do this. She's kind of being dragged along, but that is her first meeting with the group. And we've also got Edward Newgate and Marshall D. Teach. So let's see. Edward Newgate he's the strongest man on campus, the best fighter on campus. He's got a legend that he's supposedly so powerful that he once split a blackboard in half just from drawing on it with chalk, writing on it with chalk. He's got a nice his shirt should always the collar of his shirt should always be wide open. He's always wearing a jacket that is not tied down, so it's nice and
they should have just let him
loose.
Be a teacher though, right? I mean, like,
but he's a pirate, you know, he can't.
Yeah, that's true.
He can't be the guy in charge. That's
he could be like the music teacher who's like awesome.
I love the backwards.
Is that on Teach, you mean?
On Teach, yeah. Yeah. I didn't notice that it was like a baseball.
I think they go back and forth because that other design is not a baseball hat.
Like Whitebeard's other Teach's. Blackbeard one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he clearly had some different ideas. Marshall D. Teach is, let's see, he was part of Whitebeard's group when he first joined the school, but then they had a falling out and he got shunned from the group for causing trouble. Therefore he's looking for a way to get back at Whitebeard during the athletic festival. And some of his, this is the one, the one with all the comments is the one that has the baseball cap. And so he says, yeah, he's got to have it. And the brim's got to be flat. It's got to be poking upward, as he wears it, backwards. Some of these comments are like big, he has to have a big collar, and to wear the beaded necklace. His arms and legs should be really big, like as big as they're willing to draw it for these commercials. Sloping shoulders, two vertical stripes along the sleeves of his jacket. Slightly shorter legs, and he still has pretty much the exact same stomach waistband that he wears in the original manga. Of course, their finished shots are from the school festival one, where Blackbeard is certain that he's knocked Whitebeard off. They're doing the of course this is the I don't know, I guess, what do they call these? The piggyback. No, it's like, it's like the piggyback fight where, you know, you have the guy sitting on each other's shoulders and they have to sort of like try to knock each other off.
Yeah, I think they did that in My Hero Academia, similar thing.
It's a very Japanese athletic school festival type of thing to do. He's plotting
Academia. Is that no? Okay.
He is plotting how to knock Whitebeard off, and Whitebeard is meanwhile distracted by he's concerned for Ace, and that's when Blackbeard attacks. And after this, we have a bunch of kind of the shots of these various groups of characters that you see in the background, just littered throughout these commercials. And they're really great. It's harder to see the comments, but if you've done the freeze frame on these commercials, you've seen a lot of these groups. I really like too that he it's not just like, okay, here's all of CP9 in one group. Like, he actually kind of mixes and matches them, but they're still like within kind of understandable categories. So like the cool girls doing the like sort of cheerleading style poses.
Wait, so which who's is here? Like,
That's Miss Doublefinger, Miss Doublefinger,
and Sadie. Yeah,
yeah,
where they're doing that great like pose with the bent knees and their arms stretched out. He has like little things like Sadie's horns are actually just a headband that she's wearing. Koala's got the above the knee socks, of course.
Koala's the most ready for high school, I think. Like, they didn't really change anything about Koala. She's like...
Yeah. She just popped right off the manga. Portia has the jacket tied around her waist.
I like this one here with Crocodile and Vivi having an argument and Koza looking on.
Yeah, that's
like,
a...
He's like, what's going on here?
It's like, oh, I don't want to get involved in this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Kaku and...
Fukuro.
Yeah. Wow. They made him look as human as possible, and he still doesn't look human. Like,
yeah. I wonder. I imagine look like the crocodile. It's maybe like Crocodile is trying to hit on her, and she's not having it. But then Koza is like, you know, he's got the secret crush, and he's like, oh no, he's hitting on my going on over there.
I think that's exactly
clearly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly the situation.
So Croc had a crush on Vivi this whole time. That explains so much. Ms. Wednesday. Yep.
I'm really confused by the pairing of Little Ors Jr. and Shinobu.
Oh, that's who that is?
Yes, that's Shinobu from Wano.
Oh my.
Hey, maybe they, no.
Ors did go to
Ace.
Oh, no, yeah, you're right. Ace. Yeah.
He made him a hat. I don't know if Ors Jr. went to Wano, but he might have.
Yeah. I mean, he's wearing an umbrella for the hat. Like, that's what that is.
I like
that.
So
he just cut the handle off the umbrella. Yeah.
I'm actually shocked. I've never seen in media someone just cutting off an umbrella and using it as a hat. Like, I'm actually surprised I've never seen that.
I'm guessing it's probably like she's yelling at him like, you can't wear that on your head. That looks so stupid. And she's got this like weird baby bonnet with her pigtail sticking out.
What a weird choice for Shinobu there. Yeah. Are Rayleigh and Shaki on a date? Is that what's going on?
They were at the restaurant. They were
at the restaurant. Right. Okay.
They were. Yeah. And Law is switching to Shigi and Smoker up here.
Yes.
That's what that looks like.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works in the real world, but I'm not going to try and think about it too much. Maybe they were acting. I think they were just like sitting there, right? It was like in a classroom, if I recall.
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Blackbeard and Thatch fighting with...
Yeah, over the fruit.
That's the scuffle. It looks like a pineapple. No, it looks like it is a devil fruit. What does it say in the comic?
That's the dark, dark fruit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it exists in... It exists in the alternate dimension here.
Yes, yeah. Ace and Sabo, they're the modeling buddies, clearly.
Again, these two characters lifted almost completely from the manga, like very little.
The comment is Ace's belt and accessory are lifted straight from the original. Sabo's still got to have his cravat.
It looks like Ace's thing is more of just the bolo tie. I don't see the hat. Because wasn't it like...
No, it's Sabo's hat.
No, I'm talking about the...
Sabo.
Ace. Yeah, wasn't Ace's thing... Did I say Sabo? Wasn't Ace's thing attached to his hat, though? Or something like that? It looks like it's just like the bolo tie. Not the cravat. Yeah. It's a separate, two separate neckwear accessories. And then you got the Whitebeard and Blackbeard pirates fighting there.
Yeah, the Blackbeard guys.
Oh, so that's Enru. I just remembered. Sorry, with Enru with Shiryu and Fujitora. That's an interesting combo.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if there's any interesting comments on these. Okay. Yeah. Van Ogre has a lacrosse pole instead of his sniper rifle.
poor guy.
That's pretty funny.
That's a downgrade, isn't
it? He would play lacrosse.
Oh, he definitely would.
Yeah.
Lacrosse, the one sport that my school was good at.
Yeah. He's got the comment on Enru's thing that, okay, yeah, he doesn't have, it's not his earlobes stretching out. It's just his weird, like, sort of not beanie hat.
His strange headwear. Kinda? I don't know what the...
Yeah, let's see.
With the admirals and mm-hmm. Kobe and Elvita. And again, Kobe and Elvita on the other page, too.
Sakazuki, by the way, looks just as old and angry
as yeah. Ever. Yeah.
I love the Kizaru on the next page doing the water bottle challenge.
Yeah, that's funny.
Where was that? Oh, yeah. Kicking the cap off. That's mm-hmm. That probably had to be pretty well, I guess I'm trying to remember my grasp of time has changed so much over the past 12 months that I don't remember when that was a thing, if that was like at the height of that fad when he designed these.
That was a few years ago, I think. Or maybe it was a few days ago. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I got the Kaido and Shanks facing off. He made sure he's like, okay, if you're gonna draw Shanks in profile, make sure that the left side is facing the viewer so that you can see the scar. The scars on his face.
I didn't realize both Kobe and Alvita versions. There's on one page the more recent one and the original on the second mm-hmm. page.
Yeah,
I was not expecting Izo and Haruta to be there.
Yeah, me neither. But there they are.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there's there's a lot of background space you can fill with characters on that. That big athletic scene.
Yeah.
I like the Bartolomeo, where he's got to, he's like, make sure that he has the little blush marks when he's spying on Luffy.
Weirdly enough, he's also lifted straight out of the manga. Like, it doesn't look like they did anything to him. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he only had like a little brief shot, I think. They got same thing with Neptune. He just has legs. That's it.
Yeah, what a big Vista, change.
Odin's hair.
Vista and Mihawk, the mustache brothers, I guess.
Oh, that's Vista. I thought that was Roger, because Roger has almost the same.
Yeah, he's got the same mustache.
That makes more sense. Vista and Mihawk.
Dadan is there. And
what is mm-hmm. Dadan doing?
I guess it's during athletic festival.
I guess, she must have fallen off or something. She's been knocked out of the game.
She was very sad that that Ace got knocked out, I think, and feels bad for Luffy. Yeah, yeah, I think it's that scene with Garp.
Weevil and Weevil's there.
And Ms. Buckins, mm-hmm. everyone's Ms. favorite.
Buckin, yeah.
Get up, Weevil. He even drew Everyone like a sort of you. Sketched You're out a one.
Little cap you in case it, she son. Needs to wear one for the competition since they all have to wear white or red caps.
Is that Hancock?
Where's Weevil is crying. I guess because he fell off too.
Do you know Steven?
I can't tell.
So is that Hancock or Bonnie or next to Kuma and Katakuri there?
Let's see. Ace, Bonnie, Kuma, and Katakuri.
Okay. That's the answer.
Oh, yeah. Ace's first appearance, right?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When he fell into the food.
Yeah, and that little thing that he has in the box is describing a katakuri that he's not wearing a muffler. It is something called a snood, which I've never heard that word before, but it's...
Wasn't that really weird, that game from, like, the PC game where you hit the snoods into the thing and they're triangles and circles? Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay.
But it's another kind. It's like similar to a scarf, I guess. And so that's he's depicting that it's a fringed snood. So I don't know. That might be like it might be like sort of like a scarf, except it doesn't unravel. It's just like a circle.
Another good COVID cosplay is katakuri. I'm just realizing.
yeah.
Carrot with her headband and no tail.
And what is she playing? Oh, no, she's just taking a picture, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. I love Bon Clay's whole thing here.
Yeah, his little bag, his backpack is great.
Wait, so what's going on with this? Are those just like those like kind of big baggy pants, or are they rolled up?
His flood pants.
Yeah, that's
it's like tracksuit pants. Okay. But they're just really baggy and he has them rolled up.
And the pom-poms on the... Is that pom-poms on the bag?
They probably have elastic at the bottom, and he rolled them all the way up.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We never see his face, do we? Because, yeah, not in this picture. Maybe we do in the commercial.
Yeah, and he's... he is pointing out that the little dots on his head, the pom-poms, are a headband. You just can't see it from that angle. You can't see the band from that angle, so makes him look more like the character. And then we have the white beard, black beard, crocodile, and Phoebe shot as well. And then we get some more, these are not just of the characters, but like specifically of the different shots and scenes in, the commercials themselves. So like Zorro, where he's in the classroom, practicing with the pencils instead of his like kendo swords, which is great. And, his comment here is, you know, since there's a lot of shots of Zorro looking like pained or really serious, this one you can be a little more loose with his features, because this is more of a comedic cut, because he's just like goofing around with these pencils in the middle of class, and getting, you know, scolded by the teacher. And you have Zorro after he gets beat by Mihawk, knocked flat on the ground, and he's, you know, crying tears of frustration. Let's see what else. The little shot of young Zorro and Kuina in the picture frame, which is a good way to call back to that. Let's see. Zorro. Yeah. What else do we got here? You know, when he's hard at work training, and then he does his like, you know, I will never lose again pose with that arm raised on the angle. That one's pretty cool.
Let's see. I like that drawing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's very clearly reminiscent of that famous scene. And so he's kind of like got all these little notes about how to make the more realistic looking version of the character, like which details to nail down, which is interesting.
I gotta watch these commercials again.
I know. Yeah, it's gonna make me. I'm gonna go do that after we're done.
I'm gonna do that right now.
The Nami sketches we have. We have a couple more scenes from this, the Nami arc, like her, kind of asleep over her, studies or her homework, and, getting chewed out by, her boss at work, Arlong, who he's even got the spiky or the pointed teeth. I think aside from like his nose being, slightly more human in, dimensions, he pretty much looks the same. He's got the tattoos and everything. And, you know, the scene where she's kind of getting pumped up by the breeze with the pinwheel. It's supposed to look dramatic. And, lastly, when she's, buckling under the pressure, in the classroom, and she says, "Help me." And, there's another student who hears her, and she's got the tears in her eyes.
So who are those people who are sitting on the train with her?
That's Baby Five, Psy, Mihawk, and Perona. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then,
Baby Five and Psy. I didn't figure that.
Yeah. And then, Leo and Manchuri are in the background.
Oh, right.
The finish shot.
Not in the, okay. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really neat how, like, a lot of these group shots are basically, like, it's like he drew them up, and then they're basically in that exact finished form in the commercial. It's really neat. Let's see. We also have the Vivi commercial where... Yes, it's the story of how she gets invited into the group, and then she has to transfer out, and there's the tearful goodbyes.
I love the Dr. Correa scene here with Luffy trying to help Nami by waking her up with a tangerine over her head. That's very cute. Oh, yeah, that's Caesar Klein, right? Yeah, okay, sorry, I was looking in the back. Caesar and Law.
Caesar and Law in the background, just enough space for a little like human man, you know, the anatomy mannequin in the background too.
Oh, and Law's holding the heart from the mannequin, I'm guessing. And
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And Caesar's like grabbing his own heart. He's like, oh.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah, and then just the shots of them hanging out as a group. This one is pretty self-explanatory. I like that they've got they put the X's on the sweatbands.
Everyone who got an X tattoo didn't have to do that. They could have just gotten sweatbands. Yep. It would have been the same thing.
Always on the left arm, though.
Yes.
Always left
arm. Always left. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then lastly, some really cool, like, really really refined drawings that he did for the action scenes in the school festival, Marineford commercial with let's see here, they have Fujitora, and Rebecca is starting the festivities with Fujitora's meteor in the background.
All right.
And then, so we've got this action shot, cool action shot of Ace and Ivankov, Jinbei, Hancock, Luffy, Sakazuki. I think you can kind of see here the Ivankov... with like what he was talking about in the interview, where he is, I guess, closer to the Dr. Frankenfurter proportions than in his original gigantic head form, but still very much Ivankov for sure.
Imagine Ivankov.
Very much Jinbei's hair too.
Yeah, so I was actually going to mention that. Like, Sanji can't have a little curl at the end of his eyebrows, but Jinbei gets those curly eyebrows. Like, it seems a little unfair to Sanji. But
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And Hancock's
well,
back there too.
Jinbei also loses his little goatee, though. So they both got that.
That would be unrealistic. That's just
yeah. Yeah, but not Blackbeard. Blackbeard's still got the. He's got the
facial
the stubble
hair
there
and the arms.
Yeah.
Whitebeard's got a whole mustache. So.
Oh, yeah, he grew up before our eyes and got the full mustache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love this, the big shot of Blackbeard with all of his cronies here. Let's see, Burgess, Ogre, Shiryu, Vasco shot where he's chugging a bottle of water.
Gatorade, I'd assume.
It could be Pocari Sweat or something. Yeah.
San Juan Wolf. My God.
San Juan Wolf makes no sense still. Like,
yeah. I can see his comment is, he's huge, lol. So, yeah.
He just gave up there. He's like, okay, this isn't, I'm just going to draw
yeah. him. I'm not sure. Did he actually appear in the final shot? Because it looks like
he did
in the thumbnail. Okay. I can't see him in the thumbnail. Oh,
you mean in the final shot of the
commercial. Oh, wait, yeah, he is in the final shot, but he is regular human proportion. He just has the same facial features.
That's a shame. Mullet. He should have been ridiculous. It made no sense. I mean, a meteor is falling out of the sky. I mean,
yeah. There's a point yeah, maybe where they just figured they couldn't get too One Piecey. But Avalo Pizarro with the weird, like broken teeth look. It's pretty great. Doc Q's got the apple. And then, of course, Luffy looking fierce. He's ready to fight.
And by fight, I mean provide noodles for our enjoyment.
Yeah. Yes, he appears. Oh, and this is interesting. It also says, it points out, I did not realize this. So the caption there is, Luffy appears from behind Whitebeard's back through the Zoro, Nami, and Vivi commercials. You did not see Luffy's face. So here in the final one is where you, in the climax, is where you finally see his face.
Right. Yeah. I remember they purposely hit it. Yeah.
I did not realize that. I did not put that together. That's kind of cool.
That's the Hungry Days section. I think next time we're going to be going through what exactly, Stephen?
There's a really cool and very in-depth interview and kind of process the evolution of how the volumes get put together, including like the back and forth of how like Oda does the illustration, and then they design the color schemes and like the different stages of laying it out and getting approvals and this and that, all of the extra, you know, materials and the SBS, how that stuff all comes together. There's also they have a list of like color patterns that like, here's an example of like a dozen different color patterns for the same cover that we present to Oda, and he decides which one he likes, and then we fine tune that. And there's also a bunch of comments from this designer. He said he's been working on it since volume 6. From this designer about stories and favorites of the covers throughout the series. So he has some in-depth like comments about this is how, you know, putting together this one felt, or like this is what we did about this one. And so I'm sure there'll be some really cool stuff in there.
Yeah, we talked about some of these on our top five too.
Yeah. And then lastly, because that, I feel like that's still a pretty substantial section, so there probably have to be yet another installment, a fourth one after that, where we actually go into Oda's sketchbook stuff, where, you know, you get to see his rough designs for the different locations and his like plotting maps where he writes out how everything is supposed to happen for the arcs and stuff. And we'll definitely make sure to get Greg in on that one, because that's what he really wants to talk about.
Yeah. So thank you, Stephen, for taking us through the Hungry Days section of magazine number 9. Excited to continue. It almost makes me excited for the manga breaks that we get to do this.
So if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go get some cup noodles, and I'm going to go rewatch some commercials.
Okay. Just remember to defeat your enemies with cup noodles. Segment.
Well, yeah, you offer them the cup noodles afterwards, and that's how you become friends.
That's how you become friends. Everyone knows real friendships are forged through the battles that you have with cup noodles. Anyway, let's get into some anime, and then we'll round off.
Sounds good. All right.
This is the anime recap for episode 930, A Lead Performer, Queen the Plague Emerges. I'm your host, Sam, and today we have a reunion. The anime recap has returned. We have our good friend, Edward, with us.
Thank you, Sam. It's good to be back. It's like the first episode in like, what, 2.5 months or something like that?
Something like that. And joining us as well is our dear friend, Jill.
Oh, we are post-time skip now for us, 2.5 months later.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've grown like 3 beards in the meantime. So the title card this week begins in 5 minutes and 19 seconds. And we begin with a scene where Raizo is in Beast Pirate's disguise, and he's like pretending to be, I guess, a high up in the food chain. And he's like kind of bossing around this like crab man, smile fruit user.
What kind of disorganization is it, like, where nobody knows who's even in the group and nobody knows who their boss is?
Right. Yeah. I made a comment on Twitter thinking that this was a filler character, but he does exist in like one tiny panel in the manga. Double check.
Real body horror. I don't know. Like, I look, every time I saw his eyeballs, I was like, I'm not about this.
Yeah, he hits different than the other smile for user. Like, he's just like more like straightforward cartoony rather than like kind of grotesque and like body horror like the other ones are. But that almost makes him creepier because he stands out.
Mm. Also, he's like a Pokemon at one point because he just starts being crab over and over again. And I'm like, ooh, something happened to your brain when smile fruit happened.
He's like a core fish.
And I didn't get this until he said it later in the episode, but he does, he can only move side to side. You can't move forwards and backwards, apparently.
when we talk about who got the worst run of the smile fruits, this guy's probably up there.
Yeah.
Raizo's trying to get into the room where the keys are. This is like mostly a anime specific scene. Like, the manga did not show how Raizo got the keys, but they gave us a little scene here.
It's kind of stupid that he just transforms into his original form right in front of the guy.
Yeah, like the guy asks like one question, like, hey, I don't think I recognize you. And then Raizo has to pop right back into ninja mode and be like, silence! And he's a very
good ninja.
Yeah, he sticks the crab man to the wall with a bunch of shurikens.
Very respectful.
And
there's a reason Wano's called the Land of Samurai and not the Land of Ninja.
And we continue the scene from the episode before this, before the hiatus happened, which was Old Man Hyo being kind of shoved around by Daifugo, the Scorpion Man.
Yeah. I watched that episode again right before I watched this one, and this one was better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't remember. It's fallen right out of my head.
Yeah, but there's a lot of gifters, right? Gifters just messing around and like spitting. Luffy gets spit on a lot, and then Daifugo beats on Kyo for a long time. That second half of that episode was rough.
Yeah, so Kyo has just like a surplus of food tickets, and Daifugo is just like, where on earth did you get these? Who could have possibly given you like so much food? And out of respect for what Luffy has done for him, Hyo will not reveal his identity, and he goes on a big speech how Luffy has a chivalrous spirit and how he's just like the samurai that used to be in the country. And he's got a nice little phrase where he says, after so long, my heart is filled with joy and my stomach is full. And just as the tension is rising, Luffy jumps in and he kicks Daifugo, and the big triumphant music plays. Mm-hmm. And I remember, this is structured pretty differently than it was in the manga. Like, I remember in the manga, this was, like, juxtaposed against some of the other prison workers or, like, the prison guards, you know, doing the whole spiel about, like, oh, the first offense you lose an arm, or the second offense you lose the whatever. And, like, that's, like, juxtaposed to, like, Luffy's, like, devilish grin as he's...
I think that was Alpaca Man did that in the previous episode.
Yeah, yeah. The last episode recap for this episode like had that scene, but they're just for pacing reasons that they didn't put those side to side like as interestingly as that.
Jill?
Oh, I was about to say, yeah, he did the dance.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. We have a scene with Solitaire, the monkey girl, who I keep wanting to like, I keep wanting to say she's like a spider monkey because she's got like six arms.
But yeah, I was like, what monkey has six arms? Like, where are we going with the smile fruit? How does this make sense?
She's just got extra monkey arms. And she's pursuing, she and her men are like pursuing Ryza, who's like dashing through the hallways and doing his ninja things and trying to keep the bad guys away. And off in the distance, making his way to the prison camp, we have Mr. Queen. And he's got like the rocking guitar music soundtrack following him around.
Funky, sounds like something. Bass. Love it.
Sounds like something that would have been in like a PS2 wrestling game. That brings us to the eye catch of the episode. Like this is an example of where they're like holding on close ups and stuff a lot in throughout this episode to like buy time, and it does get a little frustrating.
Well, they also don't want to show you like how big, like the full picture of Queen, I guess, until he starts dancing.
I mean, we've seen him though. Like, we've seen him with when we met King as well.
That's true.
So we come back from the commercial break, and Luffy is beating up some beast pirates. It's about what you expect of Luffy fighting some goons, but then a new face shows up. Babunuki, the elephant man, who's got just an elephant coming out of his chest and stomach.
He's so big.
And, you know, some of the prison guards are, like, remarking on, like, you know, Luffy should be almost immobile with his sea prism stone handcuffs, so it must mean that they're not working or they're fake handcuffs. But Babunuki is quick to, you know, point out like, no, this kid's just got a lot of willpower. He's just so strong that the handcuffs don't bring him down that much. And so he blasts Luffy with an elephant's Mark Chu is the name of his attack. And he like blasts like cannonball or whatever out from his elephant trunk jutting out of his chest, and it blows up and Luffy hits the ground. He's like, oh, he's so strong.
That was supposed to be a pun for, because it's got something to do with like, you know, sneeze, but there's also a canon term. I forget what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I was going to ask, like, what is a Marchu? Like, obviously, Achu, like a sneeze.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. During all this, Queen has arrived, but he's just kind of hanging out around the corner, making like hard eyes at a picture of Komurasaki. And his henchmen are like, they just don't have the heart to tell him she's dead. The news has not traveled all the way yet.
Look at this execution just gets canceled because we have to go watch Queen's performance. Everyone is, everyone's like, yeah, it's too important to miss. You can't,
they punish dance.
Yeah, punishment, whatever. But
listen, dancing. We're on a time schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, just the a few days ago, like the trailer for the upcoming episodes kind of went out, or like some TV spot or something. And the Queen dance animation really stood out, and the memes were really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the dance animation is great. He's got the funky song. He's singing like, "Oh, if I get thinner, I'll be too popular. So I'll stay this way, and that's my funk, that's my style." He's just a man who's very at peace with himself, and he's dancing. He's having fun time, and like all the prison guards are like coming together and dancing, and he's got backup dancers and stuff.
A lot of repeated shots of the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. He is Queen the Plague, a lead performer of the Animal Kingdom Pirates Bounty, 1,320,000,000. And once he gets the dance out of his system, he sits down on his little chair, his little throne, and he turns to Babunuki. He's like, "All right, just I'm a cool boss. Just tell me the top three most troubling things you're dealing with in life right now, and we'll see what we can do about it." And he's like, "All right, give me number three." And Babunuki, "Eustace Kid has escaped." And Queen makes this like delirious, shocked face. But then immediately he's like, "All right, now number two, give me number two." And Babunuki says, "The keys to the sea prism stone cuffs have been stolen." Big shock face again. And then number one, the biggest problem that they're facing right now is that Straw Hat Luffy is escaping, like right now, like in our line of sight. I always thought this joke was hilarious in the manga. I appreciate it even more with time.
Yeah, I love seeing the little dot of Luffy just climbing up was fantastic.
And he gets the big and I love how like he gets the big shocked face, but he's not deterred. He's still pushing the conversation. "All right, give me problem number two." And every time it's just like the big dumb shock. And Queen's like, go chase him, you idiots. And Luffy is climbing the wall with his bare hands like a rock climber. And the episode ends with a zoom in on Luffy's eyes. I feel like that's been a really common way to end episodes lately. Just like dramatic zoom in on somebody's eye. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To be continued. General thoughts on this episode, you guys.
It's all right. So, okay, episode. I like the part where Luffy had to fight without his gum gum powers. That was pretty fun. Queen's great. Queen's music is really good, and the dancing animation Queen was animated very well, but there was a lot of shortcuts, I feel like, in this episode with like repeated shots and just shots with very little going on. But the parts that were good, I liked.
Yeah, I'll agree with Ed on there was like a bunch of repeated shots. I didn't like this episode. I mean, the last 5 minutes I thought were great. The rest, honestly, I did not care for. It was a bunch of repeated shots, and there was so much chanting in this episode.
Yes,
I mean,
that's right.
Chanting for Queen, chanting for Straw Hat.
Chanting to kill him.
Yeah, chanting for the crab. I was like, okay, I don't know if it's because they had something with the voice actors because of COVID, because it felt like there was so much stretched out more than usual with just like repetition. But I mean, the last 5 minutes, Queen is great. The dance was animated really well. And that last scene where like Babanuki gives the three problems was done like spectacularly. I loved the timing with that. So yeah, I didn't really care for the episode, but hopefully what comes up next is good.
Yeah, I'm right in the middle with this episode as well. The Queen's good. I like the Crab Man scene. I like that we get they had to come up with a little mini plot to kind of fill in some of the blanks in the story, even if it's a pretty low bar. But I did like that scene. I do like the Queen stuff. I love just the final joke with Queen. The top three problems gag is killer. It buys so much time. We spend so much time just like with, you know, Daifugu just like holding on to Hyo. We spend so much time just like slow close-ups on Queen. That about sums it up. I mean, I think I was like really excited for the show to return because like that one trailer with the dancing Queen and like other scenes as well. Like there's a Zoro fight in there. Like, They picked all the best animation of like their upcoming episodes and put it in that little trailer thing. Mm-hmm. And like the Queen dancing thing, like it doesn't quite hit quite as well when it's not as like tightly edited as it does in like the previews. But it looks pretty cool anyway.
All right.
Anything else you guys want to say, or are we ready to move on?
It's just the anime is the anime has. Even if it goes away for 2.5 months, it doesn't really change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would like to be like, oh, yes, 2.5 months to go into this one beautiful episode. But it was 2.5 months of them dealing with, like, animating, recording around COVID. So it is what it is.
Yeah. All right. I think we can move on.
All right.
Kidoki.
This has been the One Piece Podcast, episode 627 for, what is this, June 29th? Yeah, great episode today. The anime is back, and we got to talk a lot about Hungry Days. Should we talk about that Bump of Chicken song, too? Because I like that Bump of Chicken song. I don't know if there's much else to say about it.
It's a good song. Go watch the music video.
Yeah, just watch the videos if you haven't. And I wish we were sponsored by Cup Noodles, because I think this episode would do a really good job to help promote their Cup Noodles. So those are good, too.
Sure, yeah, they need help getting the word out about Cup Noodles.
It's a little independent operation. They need all the help they could get. I think they had that on my airplane last time we went to and from Japan. And I'm like, wow, this feels fancy.
My airplane too, yeah.
These couple cent cup of noodle make me feel really fancy. So that's going to do it. We have a new manga recap next week. We'll be continuing our design deep dive, as we mentioned earlier, with the volume cover productions and design. That's going to be in the next installment, so that's whenever the next manga break is. This week we have some really cool stuff coming at you. I think this week we will have Fight Together Episode 2. We're going to be talking all about Pride and Pirates. So it's our LGBTQ plus episode. Probably one of the most enjoyable and eye-opening episodes of the podcast I've done in 11 years. So that's, I would definitely listen to that. We have some special, very different guests that might be available on Patreon right now. If it's not now, it will be before it comes out on Friday for everyone. We also have Forced to Watch Four Kids with Steve and Alex. The first episode of that, or the pilot episode, is available now on Patreon at patreon.com/onepiecepodcast. It will be available for free for everyone on the main feed probably next Friday. We have a lot of stuff happening, obviously, so check all that out. And if you have not subscribed to Patreons, now is a pretty good time. Also, we're doing a lot more on Discord, including recording our podcasts. So let us know what you think about what these sound like. And just generally, I know last week I had some sort of weird monster at the end. You know, these things happen, though. It's just my inner self coming out. Steven,
he went Monster Zach.
I went Monster Zach. Or Heavy Point Zach, maybe. Monster yeah. Zach is a whole separate thing. Steven, where could people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Translatosaurus. And you can also read my work on One Piece and Time Paradox Ghost Writer at Shonen Jump on their app or on Manga Plus. .shueisha.co.jp.
Yeah, I just caught up with chapter 7, which as of now is the most recent one. It's fun.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It moves very quickly, and it's very good at hooking you along, so it's been fun so far.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about how One Piece art is a non-traditional. I think it's a lot more. It was written by who was it? It was the artist of this one. They did another series.
They did a series called Cross Account, maybe.
Yeah,
it was he had a sort of rom-com smartphone based series a few years ago.
I remember that.
In Jump.
I think that's when. I think that might have been an Alpha, Shonen Jump Alpha, even. It might have been that.
No, wasn't. It wasn't that long ago, but it was definitely before the whole, kind of opening up the whole vault, doing the whole vault of chapters, all of that stuff. It was a little bit before that.
Anyway, it's a super cool series, and it's been going in directions I wasn't quite expecting. I thought it was going to be going in a very different direction. So, it's cool. Check it out.
It's cool.
And it seems like it has maybe not as much dialogue as One Piece, but there's a lot there. Ed, where could the good people find us?
Well, you are Zach_Logan on Twitter. I am Edward E1Piece. I'm also at Weeb Trailers. The podcast can be found at onepiecepodcast.com, twitter.com, youtube.com, and facebook.com/onepiecepodcast. onepiecepodcast@gmail.com is our email address. onepiecepodcast is the Skype name. Please support us. patreon.com/onepiecepodcast. Get those special podcasts Zach was talking about before. Let's see. You can also subscribe on SoundCloud, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, or call us on our phone number, Zach.
I think by this point you wouldn't be surprised it was Apple Podcasts. That phone number is 347-497-MAJI.
MAJI.
That phone number again, 347-497-6254. Call anytime.
Anytime.
With your questions, comments, theories, or why you want to thank me for feeding you, this is a great episode again this week. I am very excited. The anime is back in earnest, and I want to thank Sam on that end. It is recorded. We're recording this a little earlier than usual, so we'll see. I assume it's there. If not, though, we'll be back next week, regardless, with a new manga recap, and we'll see you then, everyone. Take care. My name is Zach.
My name is Ed.
See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
I know I shouldn't eat the whole can of corned beef hash by myself, but I'm just so darn hungry.